It's Hey Bestie.
Welcome to Hey Bestie.
We really suck at this. We're gonna get better. It's fine.
Hi, and welcome to Hey Bestie. We're best friends, Sarah and Kim, and we're introverts who like to talk.
Hi, I'm Kim.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is our very first podcast. We decided to do this after almost, how many years? 20?
Yeah, I think so.
20 years of being best friends who can never talk to each other enough. We met in high school in one Texas city, and now we live in two other cities, still in Texas. We chat at least once a week, and those weekly conversations have sort of evolved into what is now Hey Bestie. We really hope you enjoy our very first episode.
I've blogged about this before and probably tweet ranted about it multiple times, but I really, really hate the phrase guilty pleasures.
Oh, me too.
So first, I think it's applied to things that women or teen girls are more likely to like and not things that are really specifically things that men supposedly like, except for maybe cheesy action movies. But I like those too.
Yeah, I can't think of any man that I know that's ever used that phrase before.
Yeah, me too. So that makes me think that maybe it's something that's kind of meant to imply that women are supposed to have guilt over the things that they would like, mm-hmm. or things that are more women focused. Like, I know I've heard it a bunch of applied to a bunch of things that I like before, and I find it really frustrating.
Yeah, me too. I don't think it should exist. I can't understand what the reasoning would be behind it other than to make people feel guilty for liking certain things, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of it now is just kind of like it's a phrase that people use. So it just kind of is said not really in a really serious way. Like, you're not really thinking about what it would mean if you thought about the words individually.
Yeah, it's a really common phrase.
Yeah, so you hear it all the time. But I mean, not everything has to be a documentary where you're learning something. Mm-hmm. And I guess you're supposed to feel bad about watching or reading it is what that kind of makes me feel like.
Yeah, this idea that if you don't get anything educational out of a program, it's not really worth your time.
Exactly. But isn't the point of fiction sometimes just to get away and to just step outside of your experience or experience something else or just escape reality for a little while?
Yeah. And I feel like that's really, really important, especially lately, like in our current political climate when things can get pretty dark. Having something that makes you smile and laugh and not necessarily have to get anything else out of it is really important and an essential part of my, and I know a lot of other people's, self-care lately.
Exactly. So a while back, I saw Shonda Rhimes, the creator of Grey's Anatomy and Scandal and, you know, all of Shondaland. She said she finds it insulting whenever she hears people use the phrase guilty pleasure to refer to her show.
She should. She's super successful and she owns Thursday nights. So she should be insulted by that.
Yeah. I mean, is there anyone else that even has as many shows on at one time as her? I don't think so.
And that reinforces your point just a minute ago about guilty pleasure being geared toward stories about women or things that women seem to be more into. But that doesn't hold up when you think about it because it's dramatic and they address complex issues on all of those shows. On Grey's Anatomy, they do some really serious stuff. Someone dies on that show like every 12 minutes.
I'm so glad you started watching Grey's Anatomy after years and years and years of me telling you to.
It wasn't that long. I started watching it a long time ago.
Sure. It's been on like, what, I don't know, what season is it on? 12, 13, 14,
yeah.
57? Yeah, I can't believe it's been on so long. It's like, all throughout all those years, there were so many times that I'd wish you would watch it so I could tell you about it, especially when Christina was best friends with Meredith.
Yes, that
friendship. Would be, yeah, it's so good. It's one of my favorites on TV. And I would just sit there and like be like, oh, I should tell him about this. And then I think sometimes I did mention it to you and you were probably like, why are you talking to me about a show I don't even watch? Which is probably like when someone tells you about their dreams and you just don't care.
It was on for so long, though. I feel like after a while, it got so intimidating for me to start going back and watching. Like even when it started to be streaming on Netflix, I was like, what? There's like 10 seasons I need to catch up on.
Yeah,
but
it's a lot.
I finally did it, though, because obviously it's a great show and it's really binge worthy, too. So I enjoyed binging it. Although some of the storylines do get a little heavy for binging because people do
can go really dark.
Literally die every few episodes. So you have to kind of recover. Like that Denny storyline, like the first or second season, that was the first one where I was like, yes. I need to take a couple days off to recover from this because that was too much.
Yeah, that was one that was probably easier to watch like one episode per week and then have the whole time afterwards to recover before the next season started. Because that was a rough one.
Yeah, I think I did really slow down after that. It got really heavy. Yeah, and that's when I realized, sure. too, I was like, oh, the show goes for it. They're not going to coddle me. It's not going to be all, It's not going to be all mixed steamy and dreamy.
Also, like, how many horrible things can Meredith go through? I mean, has anyone had as many traumatic experiences and, like, been able to still hold a job?
I
don't
understand. I feel like it's easier to list things, like, horrible, terrible things that haven't happened to Meredith Grey at this point.
Yeah. She's had, like, every variation of things, pretty much.
Yeah.
There's been things in the water, in the sky, in the,
like, oh, yeah, never road, just, I mean, everywhere. At the hospital, too, those, like, bombs, shootings,
yeah, the poor hospital it must need so many repairs all the time.
And then every possible thing that can happen to you being pregnant or before being pregnant or after having a kid, like, yes. All of that, she's covered all of those diseases,
so what deaths. We're saying is, it's a very dramatic show, and it's fun to watch.
It's really fun, yeah.
Oh, side note, one of my favorite episodes of The Mindy Project, which is another show that I really, really love.
Me too.
Is one where Mindy goes to visit Peter when he's in Texas, which is a really great episode on its own. But then Peter starts telling Grey's Anatomy storylines without saying it's Grey's Anatomy. So if you've seen the show, you'll recognize it.
Yes, I love that. Funny. And I love Mindy and Peter. They're also great TV besties.
Yes, he was an unexpected friend to me. I found him really annoying, like, when he first got on the show, or just, like, too frat guy, like,
oh yeah,
I don't know.
I didn't see that coming at all, like, that they would
But they're such great best friends. I love it now.
It's great. Going back to Meredith and Christina, I like to imagine now in the later seasons, now that Christina's not there, that every time something happens to Meredith and then she's not in the show or it's not a Meredith episode, she's just chatting with Christina the whole time, catching her up on all the ridiculous, crazy, dramatic stuff that's going on at Grace Sloan. Because why wouldn't she be? I mean, she's got to be, like, FaceTiming her, like, in Switzerland. Like, she's in Switzerland.
That's true. You wouldn't just never talk to your best friend again. Now I'm going to think of that.
Oh, spoiler alert.
She's, like, missing.
Spoiler alert, I guess. Christina's in Switzerland.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can spoil it. It's been, like, over a decade. People have to just, like, not care about that anymore.
Okay. I don't know how I managed, like, to avoid so many spoilers.
Well, that's why you have to binge. Once you start watching something and you know, like, a few character names, you have to really fly through, or you definitely get spoiled more easily.
That's true. I probably did get spoiled, but I just didn't realize it until I started watching.
Yeah, you can, like, forget it more easily before it's you, like, really know anything.
That's why everybody was always talking about McDreamy and McSteamy.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay, I was not talking about McDreamy or McSteamy ever to you. Thank you very much. I was always like, Christina and Meredith. I don't care about the dudes. Except for maybe Alex. I like it. But only as, like, a fill-in best friend for Meredith while Christina's away.
He's the only other original cast member still on, right?
Yeah.
Alex and Meredith.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, of the interns.
Kind of people, yeah, the intern class that started. They're still,
that group.
Some of the main doctors are still there, of course, and that's great.
Yeah. So I'm glad none of this is a spoiler for you now, and it's just not me having a one-sided conversation about Grey's Anatomy with you.
Gosh. That's where my deep guilt lies. That's where my guilt lies, is in not watching.
Yeah, in your not guilt watching. Is over not watching. Yeah. As it should be. So another thing that I do that is commonly referred to as a guilty pleasure, and that has some sort of, like, shame attached to it, or it's supposed to or something, is read romance novels, which is really ridiculous and stupid to think about because it's a huge genre, and it's, I don't know, I think the sales account for, I looked it up, like, more than half of all mass market paperback sales, so obviously, whoa, like, a lot of people are reading them, and it's a ton of books. I think it might also be, if not the most popular, one of the most popular ebook kind of formats, too. I looked up this stat in 2013, there were over 1 billion romance novels sold.
Whoa.
Which is, like, an unbelievable amount of books. So, a book with, like, a lot of info on that, kind of like the, I guess, why people might secretly read them, or people might shame people for reading them. An author did a book on that with a bunch of stats and stuff about it, and it's called Dangerous Books for Girls, The Bad Reputation of Romance Novels Explained, and I really love it. It just goes into the details of, like, who's reading romance, and it's basically, like, a lot of people.
Yeah. If I think of anybody I know that's ever read romance, I could definitely see them talking about it as a guilty pleasure. Like, I feel like...
Yeah, or, like, people are more likely to get an ebook because they don't want to walk around with the book, mm-hmm. and people see the cover, and, you know, they'll be like, why aren't you reading something more highbrow? But basically what that book comes to the conclusion of, I mean, I think the readership is something like 80% women, but that still leaves, like, a chunk that's men. Mm-hmm. But, like, the average romance reader, according to the book, is something like 30 to 54... in a relationship, college educated. And I saw a quote a while back from, I don't remember who, but it was an author on Twitter, just a tweet that I saw, where they said, like, one thing they love about romance novels is that they're books for women to get to have sex without dying. Which I think
point.
Is really accurate.
Yeah, a lot of fiction, the women, like, if they're sexy in any way, they end up
Yeah, or if there's some kind of, like, love interest, like, the thing that makes the book, like, have that emotional punch is, like, you know, the book's about some guy, he's in a relationship with a woman, will like die or something. And then that's what
powers him on to something else. There's got to be a consequence to like the relationship.
Yeah. So I thought that was nice. I liked that idea. And that, I think that does explain romance novels pretty well.
So I feel like it should be mentioned that you're a voracious reader who reads all sorts of genres all the time. And you read like hundreds and hundreds of books a year, like all different types.
That's true. I read fiction, nonfiction. I really like YA, young adult novels. I pretty much read like parts of different books every single day. But I had never read a romance novel until a few years ago.
Were you specifically avoiding it, or you just weren't interested, or what kept you from it for so long?
I mean, I think maybe I was avoiding them without, I mean, actively thinking about it. It's just that back whenever I was growing up, like when you would see that little book section in the grocery store where there'd be a few romance novels, it was just always those few with like the guy with the long hair, or maybe Fabio with long hair.
It was always Fabio.
And it just wasn't really appealing to me at the time. But then I ended up reading a lot of YA with love stories as parts of them just included in the story. And that, I think, is what sort of evolved into me wanting to read a full-on romance novel. And then I also followed a bunch of authors on Twitter. And eventually, after following Sarah McLean and really liking her on Twitter, it's just like I decided to read one of her books. And that's what got me into them.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's something I think about all the time, is that it's so important to seek out diversity in the people you follow on social media, especially Twitter, because you can find people with different yes. points of view, like filmmakers, authors, different podcasts, and it really opens you up to all these different genres and ways of thinking that you may not have considered before. So it's really awesome, and it works.
Yeah, it sells books, people. But I found her from following, I think it was a YA author, I'm thinking of who it was. And then I just found her, and then I read one of her books, and that was a Regency romance novel, and I really, really loved it. And it was the first book in a series, so then I just ended up reading the whole series right in a row really quickly, and then I've just basically been hooked ever since. And I looked it up right before we started this, and I purchased my first romance novel in January 2014. And then I checked my stats, and I've read at least 350 of them since then.
Whoa, congratulations.
So you can tell I really like them.
Congratulations.
Yeah, where's my trophy?
I do remember when I was younger, whenever we would pass the book aisle or where the greeting cards were, wherever they would decide to like stick the romance novels, it did always seem sort of like a lesser genre because it was next to the greeting cards and like the potato chips at the grocery store. And they had sort of those like cheesy covers.
Yeah, I guess though, but the secret was, is they were really just there for like all the moms who were being forced to grocery shop who wanted to be able to grab a book.
Yeah, like convenience.
Yeah, so it's like the books that are selling the most, and it was before ebooks, so where are they and what books do they actually want to buy? Mm-hmm. Romance novels.
And they obviously are buying them. So do you feel like a lot of people read romance and they're just like less open about the fact that they read romance?
Yeah, I mean, I rarely hear people mention it. Like, especially if you're in a mixed gender crowd, or if someone says, like, what kind of books do you read? I can't really recall someone just saying, like, oh, I read romance, or being really open about it right away.
Unless it's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, unless they probably, like, mention, oh, well, I'm reading this, but I feel bad about it or whatever. So now I try to always mention it. Like, I'll always, if I'm going to list off some things that I'm reading, I'll always include romance in some way, just so it's included in there, and I'm saying it out loud and people hear it and they know that I like other things and I know how to read good books and I like romance, and so they can make a correlation between it, I guess. But I've definitely tried to make a point to do that, and I just
good, you're helping.
Yeah, I'm trying to do my small part. But I especially like historical romances just because it adds that extra layer of like all the history details that I really like. So
I don't read a lot of romance, and I feel like I would really like historical romance. Is that what Regency romance is? A certain time period?
Yeah, so Regency is referring to Regency England, which I think is like 1811 to 1820, so it's a really small period of time. But then there are a bunch that are in a similar time zone, like in the Victorian England, which is a little bit later.
I feel like I would really enjoy that, the whole time.
Yeah, because that's one thing that I think that was lucky that was the first one I tried was a Regency romance, because it had that extra layer of history, and so I was just really interested in the surroundings and the people, and it's just a different life, and so I thought that was really fun to read, and they just added in the romance to it.
Are all of the authors that you read women who write romance?
I mean, I think so. I can't think of a book that I've read, a romance novel, that had a man's name as the author, although it's entirely possible that there were initials on one and that they belonged to a man.
That's really interesting, because it's usually the other way around, where a woman is trying to disguise that she's a woman because she's trying to break into a genre that's male dominated.
Right. I think that's pretty common, or at least it happens in sci-fi. And I mean, J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter, that women are kind of hidden in the other ones, but it would be the other way around for romance, which, I mean, of course, I kind of love. So one thing to know about romance novels is that they will often try to make you laugh with the title, or it'll be like some play on words, which, you know, I really appreciate. Like, I love a good pun.
You do.
And yeah, I literally bought a cake from Nothing Bundt Cake because I just love the name so much. And I was like, I don't even know if this will be any good, but I love it so
much.
Plus,
you got a tiny cake.
Right. And it was delicious. So it worked out. So anyways, the first one I read is called...
Side note, we're not sponsored by Nothing Bundt Cakes.
Yeah, they have not paid us any money. I just ate a tiny cake and it was good. And I literally bought it because of the name of the place. I just can't help it. So anyways, the romance novel I read first is called 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake. And it's the first book in a series that is called, I think, Love by Numbers. And it's by Sarah McLean. And it's a Regency romance, which I mentioned was 1811 to 1820. And I really like those just because she specifically, and then a lot of people that write in that time zone, they kind of, in that time, kind of write like an unexpected heroine. If it's a woman back then who's maybe like running a newspaper, or she's a columnist, or she's a secret scientist, or she's into politics, or any of that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, because it's not a normal thing to have. Like, that wasn't an easy role. None of those roles were easy for women to have back then. So I really, really like that. And then one thing that's fun too is, it'll kind of show a time, especially that time frame, whenever things are modernizing. So in some, it'll be all about horses and having enough candles so that you can see. Because, I mean, you don't think about how dark it really, really gets if you don't have any lights. And so you're just lighting candles everywhere. And then you'll hear about them, like, maybe installing plumbing for the first time or getting gas lamps. And it has all the kind of upstairs, downstairs, like the butlers and the lady's maid and all that. And so that's, I think that's really fun to read.
Yeah, talking about showcasing women as scientists or being into politics, especially back during that time period, I can't help but also think about how they were always wearing 29 different layers of clothing and they probably all smelled really bad.
That is very true. It was also basically super disgusting in London, where a lot of the stuff takes place. But if you Google how bad it was at the time, the pollution, it was very bad. And every time in the novels, when you hear them, like, they go out and they go on these, like, walks and they're strolling by the river, and you look up what that river was like at the time, it was basically, like, toxic sludge or something, and it must have smelled horrible. Maybe they couldn't smell it over their own smell, I don't know. But sometimes there will be a character who will say, like, I hate the city, I want to go back to the country. And they kind of say, like, they don't like the smog and they're annoyed by all the pollution. So I think that must be trying to stick the real time into what it was really like.
They had to fight even harder for their romantic moments and their romance.
Right. I mean, you have to get over some, like, serious smells and problems.
This is also making me think about the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon, the book and the movie all around the world, because even though that's not technically romance, I would say, it's still a very taboo story and was seen as sort of, I would think, guilty pleasure territory, but everyone ended up being so open about it. And now it's become this thing that everyone talks really openly about. I just think that's really interesting and kind of funny that that happened with that specific story.
Yeah, I'm not
really
sure how that happened or why. I guess probably just luck and timing, but since the topic itself isn't really even something that people tend to talk about really openly anyways, and then not in the books that they're reading either.
I think it goes back, though, to what you were saying about being more open about it with other people and not trying to hide that you're reading these books and talking about these stories, because the internet sort of, like, blew up with people that were reading 50 Shades of Grey.
That's true. Maybe that's it.
And I think social media just got so big that people, there was no shame around it because it was
something. It felt like everyone's reading it. Like, yeah, literally everyone.
It, like, became part of the zeitgeist.
So I think another thing that helped was that it started out as a Twilight fan fiction.
Oh, yeah.
So the characters were named Bella and Edward originally, and it was a fan fiction that people could read. Once you know that, when you read the story, or you know, you pay attention to the story, you can definitely see the influence there.
Yeah, you actually, you told me that, and then I watched the movie, and I was like, oh my gosh, that is Edward.
That is creepy Edward, just unvampired.
Yeah, yeah. That's Edward if he wasn't a vampire, still creepy.
Yeah, it's definitely him. So, but for the fan fiction, it had a huge, huge following, so then I think there was the momentum that gave it the push to really take off was that that whole group was really excited that a fan fiction that they had read and someone that they supported in that community was getting this book published and got a huge book deal, and so then I'm assuming that that led to some kind of instant bump for the book whenever it first came out. Like, all those people were really excited by it.
That makes sense. I'd be curious to see if this happens again sometime with another story, since it doesn't seem to have carried on to another book since 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while now. I don't know. One thing is, it's not a traditional romance by definition, so I could see it, like, not kicking off something specifically for romance. But, I mean, I have heard it sparked a lot of reading for a lot of women, like women who hadn't read a whole book in years and years and years, and then they read that, and then now they read all the time. So, and I also heard that about Twilight whenever Twilight came out, too. Mm-hmm. So, I love that. I think that's pretty cool. Like, it's just think about some big book comes out, and then somehow you haven't read a book in forever, and then there's just this one that kicks it off for you.
Yeah, it is great. Because I think a lot of people get intimidated because they think that if you're not reading something that's harder to get through or a heavier subject, then you're not really a reader or you don't really enjoy reading, when really it's just that you haven't found your story yet or something that compels you to pick up the book and read.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be a chore. And then if you start reading a book, it's worth it to drop it if you don't actually like it. Like, you don't have all the time in the world to read books that you don't actually like. So why not read something that's actually
Yeah, I've heard that over and over again as a tip from people who read a lot to people who would like to read more, to always put a book down if you're not finding it compelling or you're finding it hard to read, and try another book. Because if you're muddling through something, it's not only going to take you forever to get through that book and you probably won't even finish it.
And also, do you really want to spend your life muddling? No.
Right. We're all going to die, people.
That's definitely a factor for me, and just that's how I read so many books. It's like, doesn't happen very often now, but because I do have a certain number of authors who I basically buy every book that they write.
And yeah, you read so much too. I'm sure you know yourself pretty well as a reader now.
Yeah, and I can definitely, like, I can read the cover copy of one and be like, oh, that's not going to be for me. Or I can see some things. I can definitely weed it out pretty well. But then I have a certain group of authors that I always read. And then sometimes I'll take a chance on someone new. But if I don't, I give it a fair shot. But if it's not really grabbing me, I just give it up and move on to something else.
So, do you have a list of good romance novels for people who haven't read any romance?
You know that I do.
And maybe you can make some suggestions. I do know that you do.
Yes.
But can you share it and maybe put it in the show notes?
Yes, I will. I keep a list in my bullet journal of books I'm reading currently and then books that I particularly really like. Yeah, of course I do. So, I'll grab some that I think are good for romance beginners and add them to the show notes.
Awesome. We should talk about bullet journaling.
We should.
And segue. So, speaking of bullet journaling, late last year, Sarah brought up the concept to me as a way of keeping track of daily tasks and life goals. And we had both been looking for a way to stay organized that we would stick with and be consistent with, because we had tried a lot of different methods of organization and to-do lists, and nothing had really stuck. So we both kicked off our bullet journals in January of 2017, and we're still using them.
Yes. And before bullet journaling, I had tried so many things. Like, every few years, I would find myself in a store buying some other planner or ordering one online and then being like, I'm going to stick with it this time. And then I would spend a few weeks on it and then it would just fall apart and I would just go back to having nothing and only using the apps that I use for some other stuff and always wishing I had some kind of planner. But bullet journaling has finally, like, really stuck with me, because now it's a few months in and I don't see myself stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, I was the same. I use a Google Calendar and, like, an Outlook mail calendar and my work email and a lot of different apps for to-do lists during my workday. But I never found anything to really keep track of my long-term goals and plans and my actual accomplishments throughout the day outside of just my work tasks that I was checking off on my checklist every day.
Yeah, same. I use Google Calendar for, like, the specific appointments, or I track my bills on there to make sure that I pay them. But it's not really as cute or as fun as I always wished it was. And then sometimes I would find myself wanting just an extra space for stuff that didn't really need to be on a day, but that I wanted nearby, like, more information. But it really doesn't lend itself to that. So then I would have other apps that I would use, like Simple Note, where I have a zillion different little notes of stuff. And bullet journaling has helped me kind of reduce some of that. I still use those for certain things, but my bullet journal has a lot of the info in there that I want, and it's all in one spot, and it feels really good for me.
Yeah, and it feels really good to sit down every day with actual paper and pen.
Yes, oh my gosh, I'm loving actually using, like, paper and pen again for the first time in a really long time.
Even though it's been a really steep learning curve for my handwriting, which has fallen completely off since the early 2000s,
it's,
which I guess is the last time I wrote stuff.
It's actually kind of traumatizing to see your handwriting when you first start trying to write again after a long break, because I hadn't really used a pen for anything other than very small list in years and years and years until we started.
Yeah, my handwriting is getting better, but it's still not great.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing an improvement, so that's nice. I don't have to concentrate as hard now to be able to write, mm-hmm. which sounds stupid, but that's what happened. Oh, so before we talk about it too much, we should explain in detail a little bit more of what it is. So
basically, it's a blank journal. We both use one that has a dot grid, but you can use lines or blank paper or whatever journal ends up working best for you, because it's totally flexible. So the bullet and bullet journal is referencing bullet points, which is what makes it so simple. Everyone kind of does it differently, but the general idea is that you'll have an index up front where you keep track of all the pages. Since there's a blank journal, it can be really easy to kind of like lose track of where things are in there if you didn't have some sort of guide. So you start out with an index where you just fill in the page numbers and then each thing that you add in. And then the official bullet journaling method includes a future log, which is for your whole year. And then people tend to make like monthly, weekly, daily spreads for their information, and then other collection pages. For me, I keep it really, really simple. I use bullet points for general notes, and then I have like a checkbox for tasks that I want to check off, and then I do a little circle that I can check off for any kinds of appointments, and they're just really easy visual cues for me.
Yeah, I do the same, and I think as far as the concept of bullet journaling goes, the reason that it's so effective and so many people really like it is that it sort of compartmentalizes your life into months, weeks, and days. And you're always sort of flowing right. your tasks through each one. So you sort of make a big monthly or multi-monthly, if you're talking about your future log, plan. And then you migrate those tasks over to each month as you go through. And then you migrate those tasks to the week and to the days so that nothing's falling through the cracks. It's not the same as making a giant list where you're totally disorganized with it. And it's just a list of things you'd like to do or things that you'd like to accomplish. You're actually funneling them into real blocks of time that you can whittle away at.
Right. And then nothing, since it's so flexible, like you're not required to carry anything across if you end up deciding that you don't need to do it or it doesn't matter anymore. So mm-hmm. that I like that too. But I tend to do a monthly spread and then weekly spreads, which is just two pages per week. And I divide it into six sections. The weekend shares a section because I don't really like to schedule out my Saturday and Sunday so in such detail. And so I do all of my daily tracking on there, and I don't actually do a separate daily page. I'm not sure if you do.
Yeah, I don't do separate daily pages. I just do, like what you do, I block it out six. And then I leave an extra section at the bottom. So I actually have seven sections where I just have general notes. So if something doesn't fit into a day or if it's something that I think I might want to carry over to the next week, but I haven't made a note about it yet, I'll just take notes. Or if it's even just like a recipe I try where I want to take a note about it, I just keep a block there.
I know some people do a whole page for the day, but I think those are people who do more of that tracking, like where they track like how many glasses of water they're drinking mm-hmm. or how long they slept or how long they worked or all that. And I tried that for the first few weeks that we started bullet journaling, and I stopped doing it after a few weeks. I just didn't find it very helpful. So I did the smaller sections.
Yeah, I had a tracker where I was tracking my hours of sleep and like my glasses of water and whether or not I worked out that day at the gym. And over, I think it was 2 weeks, I tried doing a tracker. Oh, I tracked my social media posts too. And I got really intimidated and started to kind of feel like a failure because I wasn't keeping up with what I had in mind. And I wasn't filling in as many boxes on my tracker every day. And over time, I just sort of felt like, okay, every single day has been completely different. There's no pattern emerging here. And I'm not really sure if I want there to be.
Right.
So I didn't feel like the tracking had a point
for me. Yeah, it felt maybe too rigid for me too. Because I felt I feel like I handle my daily routines pretty well naturally. So if you look this up and you see all these very colorful, beautiful trackers people do,
it might work for you. It might be something
that you find useful. But then if you start feeling bad about yourself, just stop doing it and do something else.
Yeah. And that's probably my favorite thing about bullet journaling is that anything that you don't like or don't find useful, you can just get rid of and you move on to another.
Yeah. Like literally no one will know unless you start a podcast and then tell everyone about it. But that's our problem. So the other thing I love about it is, are all of the collections pages. And that's where you can come up with like just anything that you want to include in there. I know I track, like I mentioned before, books I'm reading or books I want to recommend to people, blog posts I want to write, anything like that. And that's really nice to have in there too.
Yeah, I really like the collection pages too. I track all my movies that I've watched throughout the year, all the new movies that I go see, and my travel. Oh, it's really, really good for tracking travel plans or things that you would like to do or planning for a trip in the future.
Yeah, I did a page for my New York City trip as I was planning it, which I took in April, so it's already done now. And now it's kind of fun to look back and see the page, and it has all the details of the stuff that we had planned and booked, and then the list of ideas I had of stuff we wanted to do, and we basically did all of it. So that's pretty fun to see. And by the way, have I mentioned before that I saw Hamilton while I was there?
Yes, I was just about to say, side note, I never have to guess when Sarah's New York City trip was, because she will remind me of her Hamilversary every time it comes up. How many weeks has it been now since you saw Hamilton?
I know. No, I don't. Stop. I mean, but can you imagine how big the 1 year anniversary celebration is going to be? Just prepare yourself.
I can't wait. I also really like something else that I keep track of within my collection pages that I've seen other people do throughout social media is I have a brain dump page, which is just a blank page where you can keep a running list of things that you'd like to eventually migrate over to your monthly pages or to your future log that you can't really find a place for. So I really like that because I feel like nothing gets lost. Like my bullet journal is like a steel trap of everything that ever pops into my brain that I might want to accomplish one day. And I haven't really felt like that with any other organizational technique or app.
Yeah.
And speaking of going on social media and looking at ideas, that can be really, really intimidating because I did that whenever you brought up the concept of bullet journaling. I visited the official bulletjournal.com website to get the basic overview, but then I went on Instagram and I went on YouTube and I went on Pinterest.
Oh, Pinterest. Yeah. So have you seen those monthly pages that people do with where they make the two circles using a compass and it's like this grid where they divide it into 31 sections and then they color it somehow and they put all their like monthly things
on it. Yeah, like the monthly, the circle grid.
Yeah, and they're beautiful. Yeah. So I tried to do one of those, like, and apparently even using a compass, I cannot draw two circles together in a way that is satisfactory to me. So there are none of those in my bullet journal.
Yeah, I couldn't even draw a straight line when I started.
I know. Me too.
My very first page that I tried to set up for my weekly spread, I couldn't draw a straight line and it looked so horrible and my handwriting was so bad that I tore out one of the extra pages in the back of my journal and glued it over the top so I could start over. I'm not that rigid with myself anymore, but at first I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't kick my journal off with this horrible
looking page. And mine, if you flip through it and you suddenly come to a page that's like extremely decorated with layers of paper and washi tape and just looks like a ton of effort went into it. All you have to know is that beneath that paper, something went horribly wrong. And then I furiously like cut out paper and glued it over the top of it to try and hide the evidence.
She's not lying. Every time she shows me her bullet journal and I say, oh my gosh, that page looks fantastic. She pauses and then she says, well, let me tell you about what this page used to look like.
I think I've actually taken pictures of some of the mistakes I made before I cover them up, thinking like maybe one day I'll share them to like let people know how ridiculous it can get. But yeah, all the pages in my journal that are the most elaborate started by just being like horrible mistakes that I was trying to
And you don't fix. Have to be elaborate at all. The basic idea behind bullet journaling is super minimal and really, really simple. It's just a list. It's just bulleted.
Yeah, and it's seriously like on bulletjournal.com, the guy who came up with it, it's like a black pen on paper in a journal. That's it. So that's basically the requirement. But if you go to Instagram or Pinterest or any of that, you'll see things that are, I mean, sometimes you'll see minimal things, but they'll still have better handwriting than you probably because this person practiced or wrote really slow. But but then otherwise you'll see like really elaborate things that take it to a totally, totally different level. Remember whenever I asked you if you wanted to start and then we took like 2 or 3 weeks like prepping and getting supplies?
Yeah.
Like we definitely both already owned a black pin, but we like had Amazon wish list situations happening and we practiced. Like I seriously got a compass and tried to draw some circles. It didn't work out.
Haven't used that again. I was inspired. I really like the idea of
bought a protractor. I'm just remembering.
Have you ever used that protractor?
No, I have that I do use the tiny ruler that I have sometimes.
I use a ruler too. Not
as much anymore. I used it more at first, but now my lines have gotten better just naturally. But I also have a protractor, and I haven't used that. But, I mean, I was really gearing up.
I really liked the idea of the concept, the simple concept of bullet journaling becoming this really creative thing. And I felt really inspired when I first started looking into it. But I know now that if I sat down, my planning right now consists of sitting down usually on Sunday evenings and planning out my week and just making my like 7 boxes and writing my weekly titles and being pretty minimal with it. If I want to, I'll get my markers out and I'll make like a nice heading or a nice title or I'll color something in. But for the most part, it's pretty minimal, but I still spend a good amount of time, probably 30 minutes to an hour, which is a good amount of time for me. But if I had to spend a lot more time like coloring in these pages or making these elaborate drawings or doing these elaborate headings, I don't know that I would stick with it if I felt pressure to make every page a work of art. I feel like I might get more creative with it in the future. And I'm definitely working on that and working on my handwriting. And I can more easily do nice headings and things like that now. But I know that if I felt that pressure that I felt back in January to make every page so beautiful, because I did spend a lot of time on my first
page. Right.
Pages,
whenever we first started, I tried to make a collection page. I remember I was thinking like, oh, I need a page where I list out blog posts that I want to write. And I was starting out with this header that I was going to make, and it was taking me forever. And it was really getting on my nerves. And finally, I just realized, like, hey, just write a title on this page that's like blog post to write, and then just write the list, because the point of the page is the list, not the thing at the top of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you get too caught up in making your page look beautiful or tracking in a way that you see on Instagram or on Pinterest because someone else is tracking that way, then it's probably not going to work for you the way that you need it to. I think first, you really need to focus on making the tasks and the actual lists work for you and blocking time so that you can accomplish things throughout your day and throughout your week and throughout your month, and then add those creative bits later on after you find out.
Yeah, so now I tend to like set up my coming week on Sunday afternoons or evenings, and I'll tend to like, that's when I do most of the fancier stuff, like if I'm going to add color to a page. So I do my date headers with, when I divide my pages into six sections, I do some kind of colorful or special date thing in some way. And then that way the rest of the week, as the week goes on, when I'm actually using my bullet journal, all I have to do is like grab a black pen and write the info on there. And I don't have to worry about trying to make it look better because the page is kind of already decorated and I'm just filling it in. And that works really, really well for me, because I know if I had to spend like more than a few minutes every single day on it, I would definitely just give it up.
Yeah, same. And I do use my journal every single day. I carry it with me and I reference it throughout the day, but it's really just me picking up my black pen and either crossing off a bullet point or adding a bullet point or using that little arrow that points to the right where you migrate something.
Yes,
another day.
I use that one a lot because it's just like, get over it. You didn't do it. If you still want to do it, just move it forward.
Yeah, it's really useful. And I feel like that habit of picking up my journal every day and going through my lists for the past 6 months has given me a much better grasp on how much time I have each day to actually devote to tasks instead of making this giant to-do list, which is what I would do in my apps before, and then just trying to get through it, but usually running out of time. Now I feel like I really am a lot more realistic about how much time I have in each day to accomplish things.
Me too. Since the way I do my weekly spreads is divided by six, it's like each day or the weekend combined has 1/3 of a piece of paper assigned to it. So whenever I'm adding things to it, whether that's tasks that I'm going to check off or appointments or just other notes about things to do or whatever, once that starts filling up, I know I'm probably just putting too much on one day. Like there's, I mean, there's literally no more lines left. So that's its own issue. But then like, am I really going to be able to do that all day? And then it will give me like a visual cue just to move on to another day. Like it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And just generally spending more effort on making the list and putting together your week, I think.
Yeah. And
really
just
helps.
Thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like ahead of time. And then each day, that's been a nice change for me too.
Yeah. It's much harder to ignore a piece of paper that you're having to write in every day and open up and actually spend time with.
Especially when you prepped for this journal for like 2 or 3 weeks, you ordered so many supplies, you own a freaking protractor now, you better put some stuff to use. You've got to stick with it.
And we have stuck with it, and we highly recommend it.
Yes, but don't look at Instagram or Pinterest and get scared first. Like, maybe just watch the intro video on bulletjournal.com and then try what you want to do and then look at that stuff later and then try not to feel too bad.
Yes.
We'll share notes and photos of our pages and the things that we like, including, I guess, my protractor, all the supplies we have for our bullet journals and all that stuff in the show notes in case we have just convinced you to start one.
That's it for this very first episode of Hey Bestie. Please like, subscribe, and review us on iTunes. You can see show notes, photos, and links to our bullet journal recommendations on heybestie.com. You can also sign up there to be notified when we have a new episode. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite social media, and we will see you next time. Have a great week, and thanks again for listening.
I'm back.
Why are you back like that?
Because I want you to think that's how I just recorded it.
Welcome to Hey Bestie.
These people are weird.